Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Lama Tantrapa with the new segment of the talk show, The Secrets of Qigong Masters, sponsored by Academy of Qidao, offering the most innovative programs on Qigong coaching. And today I am honored to introduce to you one of the most fascinating experts in Qigong field in America, named Damaris Charbot. She is one of the original founders of the National Qigong Association that was formed in 1996. She holds her highest certifications, a level 4 teacher and advanced clinical practitioner from the NQA. She's a registered nurse for 40 years and spent about 30 years being trained in medical Qigong, healing touch, and energy medicine, including taking prolonged Asian trips and 4 extensive trainings in China. She has studied esoteric Christianity and the divine feminine through Anthroposophic Society. She will have to explain to us what that means. As well as she studied cosmic dance for 25 years. For about 20 years, Damaris was a co-director of the Body Energy Center in Boulder, Colorado, where she had a full-time private practice and teaching program in Qigong healing. She has taught Qigong, healing touch, and her own system of energy body healing locally and internationally for many years to adults, parents of young children, and teens in high school settings. She has been developing many programs for healing treatment, family, and self-care over the last 2 decades. She currently directs the Center Place in Boulder, Colorado, where she continues a full private practice and a 4-year and postgraduate training in Qigong healing. She also leads semi-annual retreats at Hot Springs for women in understanding, experience, and appreciation of the divine feminine, empowering them with simple and powerful tools of Qigong practice and treatment to engage more fully in their lives, help their families and communities, and meet the challenges of life on Earth at this time. Well, thank you very much, Damaris, for joining us on the Secrets of Qigong Masters, and welcome to our show.
Thank you, Tantrapa. I am really pleased to be here.
And if you don't mind, I would like to go ahead and start with some simple and pretty straightforward questions. Would you
sure.
tell us a little bit about your experience with Qigong? How did you get interested in it, and how did you get involved in this lifelong study?
Well, really originally I just had these questions that were never answered by Western medicine, which was my training in the 60s and my work in mostly emergency rooms and recovery rooms and intensive care. And I was always interested in why things happen, not that they happened, you know, yes, but, you know, it just didn't seem like it would be Russian roulette or something. That's a little pun for you. But
thank you. I'm familiar with that one. Not first.
In other words, why do things happen? And so I always nurtured that question, and I explored a lot of things, some of things, you know, in the alternatives in the 70s. And, you know, some of them felt fairly familiar to me. I maybe, who knows, have done them before or whatever, or but they just weren't quite the right thing. And then I started doing energy work about 30 years ago, Western energy work first, and I just fell in love with it. You know, I just, like, I can remember a conversation I had, you know, probably 28 years ago at a stoplight when, you know, I was telling my husband, you know, like, this is really it. I'm so inspired by this. I can just see its applications everywhere, and I know we're going to need it more and more and more and more. And this is what I'm going to be doing my whole life. You know, there's no question to me whatsoever. you know. And he said what anyone would have said in 1980, which is, that's about the most half-baked idea I've ever heard in my life, you know, energy work. And I said, you know, I just thought about it a minute. I remember I was sitting there and the light turned red and I was breastfeeding my son in an old pickup. We were just sitting there and as it took off, I said, you know, it's not really half-baked at all. It's really fully baked and it's ready to pop out of the oven. And I've already, you know, that little incident just stuck in my head because of the enthusiasm I felt for doing this. But that was like really general energy work, but having really good effects. And through that process, I would say for the next 5 years, I just sort of started developing, it sort of came upon me, and I just started developing my own internal practices. And because, you know, centering was a part of therapeutic touch and healing touch and grounding, sending our poles to heaven and earth. And I just developed my own ways of doing that, maybe a little more extensive, and then moving energy inside and so on. And then when I, you know, I probably Jim McRitchie was my first teacher. I mean, there was other people at the time, but as far as in depth, and
right.
And I realized that the practices that I had been doing were Qigong, and I, you know, I just didn't have a name for them, so that just started a long process of learning internal and external practices. And the ones that I love the most are just really simple. That's why I love Qigong. For me, you know, I think Tai Chi is a beautiful art, and it is wonderful to put the time into doing that. But for me, my life destiny work has to do with practices that I can teach people at one time or in one day, and not that they have it, but, you know, they can practice it on their own.
Fascinating.
So,
but you also have a 4-year-long program. So how does it work? Am I missing something? You're telling me that you can teach this in one weekend. How do you stretch it to 4 years?
Well, what I do is I do two things. You know, my vision in Qigong is both finding the people who want to go in depth in terms of practice and treatment. And
right.
Even though that's a 4-year process, and then post-grad, because post-grad is where once you've taken the 4-year cycles, and this is not, you know, year-round or anything. It's like most of them are about 100, maybe 100 hours or 120 hours of classroom each cycle. And some people take 2 years at a time. They take the first and second together, third and fourth together, because they want to go through it faster. But, you know, in post-grad, that's where when I develop something new, I can bring it in. And people in that community, which really is a community of support for each other, when they develop something, they can bring it to the group. And, of course, that's where we can bring case studies and just, you know, like the results we're having, what we're working with. And we can work as a group. And there are certain times where that's important. So, you know, over the years, I at first was working with Healing Touch, and which a lot of people, if they would look at Healing Touch, they would see just a really simple version of Qigong. And it's off the body, and a lot of Qigong is done that way. You know, they're not assessing meridians, although Healing Touch has an effect on meridians, but it's just not part of the sort of paradigm they're working with. But then over time, there's layers and layers to add. So one of my things, even like if we're having a class, I just did a class this weekend for the third year training, and the practices are things that I can teach them in a, you know, at a, I can just go through it, you know, might take half an hour, it might take an hour, it might take 2 hours. as far as the personal practices, and then they practice them. They practice them together. We practice them together on retreats. I make CDs, and which are just practice CDs, and they help guide them. And then, but there's the treatment form. You have to layer because you can't just step into that kind of treatment. So it's really in depth treatment, and it's not for everyone out there. You know, there it is for people who want to dedicate some time to learning how to do this and using it on their friends and family, extended, you know, being a healer in an extended family, or work professionally. And a lot of my students do work professionally. But the other part
Do I understand it right that what you teach can be boiled down to just a few hours of presentation if it is just delivered as a lecture or a presentation? But then it takes a long time to practice and master it.
No, it can't be boiled down to just a few hours. I'm not saying that. I'm saying each of the layers, each of the parts of the energy body that we're learning, you know, in the training that I train, you have to develop the chi, and you have to develop the understanding of the energy body. And that is based on meridians. But it's also based on the inner cauldrons, and it's based on other principles that have to do with the energy body. And even just the Oriental meridian system has many sets of points. And like an acupuncturist may read the pulses and get a feeling for the overall energy, because they're going to read, you know, 12 different pulses. And through that overall way that they're perceiving the energy and the way that they're tapping into the hologram, then they, using their expertise, would say, why is the energy this way? And in my system, the way we would approach it is because one of the things that is really different in my system is the assessment. And because, you know, the thing is, if you can't assess in depth, then it's really hard to treat in depth, because you have to name something before it can be treated. And, in fact, the naming process is very, very important. The assessment that I teach and I developed along the way, which, like a lot of the things that I've developed along the way, have really just come through the process of working with the chi for that long, developing the chi, developing the question scientifically of, you know, why is this, and what don't I know, and what does this person actually need? And
so do I get it right that your system of energy healing is more experiential, based on the one's ability to feel the flow of energy or practice certain personal practices, and then be able to feel the energy of another person and be able to assess it, rather than theoretical practices or practices of doing forms?
It actually is all those things. There is lots of theory in Qigong healing, just as there is in all of Oriental medicine, and there's probably more, I mean, just different. I mean, it's not acupuncture without the needles, that's for sure, which is what most people think it is. So although we use Oriental medicine, so we have to understand that theory base, and therefore we have to understand the energy body in terms of that. The treatment, of course, is very different, and a lot of what we're looking at is very different. And it is about developing the chi. If you can't develop the chi, you really can't do medical qigong or qigong healing, whatever you want to call it. Because yes, you need the concepts and the theories. You have to have them. That's the shen, and you need the forms. You've got to have, a way that actually works. That's the jing, in a sense. But the chi is different. And for me, I start and throughout everything I ever teach, it's all about centering. And to me, that is the first Qigong practice and the one that is consistent with everything. Like the assessment that I was saying is a way of tapping into the hologram of the whole energy body, but really the soul and spirit. You know, so as many levels as we can perceive, and it's always developing, but just directly through the heart. And
well,
so, yeah, everything can be read that way if you are centered. And if you're not centered, of course, you can't read anything that way. You're just going to get some gobbledygook.
Yeah. I wonder if you would be able to share with our listeners anything about the relationship between the healing touch and Qigong. You mentioned healing touch as one of the first modalities that you encountered, and some of us may not be familiar with the Western energy work.
Yeah, well, healing touch is very general Western energy work. It was developed by Janet Metkin, and it came from therapeutic touch, which was developed by Dolores Kruger in the field of nursing. And then healing touch is just, it's a collection of, it's a little broader than therapeutic touch. It's not just off the body in the field. It's touching the body, and it's a very nice collection of different forms from, you know, that came from a lot of different people, as well as Janet Metkin. And it's taught in a very specific way, and they work with certainly centering and grounding. So some Qigong practice, too. I mean, well, energy practice, they don't call it Qigong. So, it's not, in other words, you're not learning, you're learning through the chakra system, really. So everything is taught through that and the perception of the field. So they very definitely are developing the chi, but they may not know specifically. The thing is, a lot of people work in the field, and they work through the chakras as they manifest through the field. But if you think about it, the meridian system is the chi. It's the life force. And if that treatment in the field can't come through the chi body, then it can't reach the material level. And sometimes you definitely need a more focused assessment in the chi body. What I started developing was just in the ability to tap into the hologram through the heart rather than looking at the whole energy, like the readout of the whole energy body. You can also, which you can do, but you can ask about various sets of points. I'm very intuitive, and I have that side. I always have since the time I was very, very young. But I'm linear logical also, you know, and I have a logical mind, which is why I went into medicine. So the assessment, the way that I do it, is kind of like a computer information architecture. So if you're asking about a set of points, and there's many sets of points, so the practitioner has to learn the sets of points in a sequence. You can't learn them all at once. There's just lots of points, and a lot of points have three or sometimes even four different attributes. So, sure. You know, if you're going to treat the point and you really want to treat a particular attribute, you have to be able to name it. So,
right.
You know, if you pull up in their information a set of points, then you have to be able to, if there is a problem in that area, an imbalance or something obstructed, then you have to be able to separate that, and usually using the five elements, separate it into different manifestations and then possibly yin or yang. And you can find all kinds of points that are closed. In other words, you know, say energy wasn't flowing between two meridians. Is it really an imbalance between the yin and yang organ meridians, or is it a left to right imbalance, or is it caused by an entry exit block? And that's
very
hard to know sometimes. Huh?
Very interesting. I'm sorry I'm interrupting you. It's not something you usually hear being dealt with very much in acupuncture in terms of the way that the energy flows between the meridians. It's kind of considered that it flows along the meridians or it doesn't. Well, of course, there are also extraordinary meridians, and those can facilitate the flow of qi in between the meridians and throughout the system.
Well, all the meridians themselves have, they have what, it's called something different in each system, but in the classical system it's called the junction points. And if that, if the meridian, say the there's an imbalance between the liver and gallbladder, then, you know, if you're reading pulses, sometimes you have to be pretty good to know, is it that the gallbladder exit point is closed and it's just not flowing, or is the junction point on the liver meridian closed, which means that that's... If that was treated, then the energy would, through the internal collaterals, just shift automatically, quickly, just in an instant, between the gallbladder and the liver. Or is it because something else further up line, you know, like a lot of Qigong healing is very symptomatic, and that's the form that that person uses. And, you know, there's just so many different ways, and what we want to do is preserve all of those different ways. But say a person either had, say they had shoulder pain, you know. Okay, so they've got shoulder pain. And in if you're treating symptomatically, you may be working a lot on that shoulder. And that's a lot of times you, it's a more yang style. You might really be sending a lot of qi into it. You may dredge it out. You may add qi to it. You may do all kinds of things. In my system, you always are preserving your qi, and you're not using your own qi. You're bringing the qi through you, which a lot of Qigong healers in China, a lot of Qigong doctors use also. They don't even try to, you know, pack it all in as jing, like in the martial arts, more yang style, and then send it out. It's a very powerful form of treatment, but it requires a minimum of 5 hours of practice a day. And, you know, when you drop it down, you're going to drop down your own qi, and that's not it's not what I'm doing anyway. But so what I...
And it
what
also depends on the person's ability to gather the qi in a certain usable fashion and then discharge that qi effectively so they do not just... gather the qi without actually being able to project it. And then if it all depends on whether or not they know what they're doing. Because
but even Qigong doctors in China, I've trained with a lot of them. I mean, they are doing amazing things. They are regenerating. They were when China was really doing this in the 90s, but now they're not. But they were regenerating hip bones. They were bringing kidneys back online that were ready for a transplant. They were doing tremendous stuff, and some of them were working in this way, and you can deplete your qi that way. There's no doubt about it, and so you want to get the right training. But my point was, if I came upon someone with a shoulder pain, or even unexplained chest pain, like what's called a hypochondriacal chest, which is mimicking a heart attack. And, they will have for sure gone through all the Western medicine tests, and if that's what it is, it won't show anything. But what...
quite a bit of nitroglycerin and things like that.
Yeah, but if that's not what they have, that none of that's going to help. But through the assessment, through the heart, you may find that, in fact, the gallbladder exit point is jammed up. Or you may also find that the dymo, the belt channel, the master and couple points are closed, which is that same point. So you're actually not going to do all that big qi stuff at the shoulder. You're just going to open the gallbladder 41 and send the energy into liver 1 and get it moving in that way, because you can more finely go into the system and determine exactly where the problem is rather than just working on the symptom. One of the things that that I have
developed. So you look for the root cause rather than just addressing the superficial symptomatology.
Right, and yet, you know, in Qigong healing, there's, you know, and that's a really broad statement because medical Qigong, Qigong healing, these ways of doing the clinical practice goes from that other part of what I do. There's the depth training and practice that I do with people who want to do that. And I have, you know, cycles of people. But then there's just what I do with the general public, you know, teaching people simple skills to work on with their children that are very effective. And working in that way, that's just a simpler way. But some of the Qigong healing is what we would say, it reaches under all of Oriental medicine. Like Oriental medicine, many people treat things that have to do with the five elements. Well, what if one of those elements, if the actual aspect of the soul, the spirit level, that is in that yin organ, because there's five aspects of the soul where the spirit lives in the yin organs, and that's Taoism. And what if one or more of those aspects, through trauma or accident or some sort of progression of injury and woundingness, what if it has actually disassociated? If it has, that element will always remain weak. And all of Oriental medicine, and we're all treating it in all kinds of ways. But if you could determine which one that was, and this was some work that I put together about 7 years ago or so, 5 years ago, I don't know. But so to determine what if the person or the child or, you know, has a disassociated soul part or more than one part, because when you have, you know, two disassociated soul parts or three, you know, your life is either hard or completely dysfunctional, or four, which is the autistic people that I have treated, that's what they have. So if you can do the energy work first, if you can really open the system, and if you can remove energy that doesn't belong to them, then I have developed a way of bringing back that soul part that it stays. And
it kind of reminds me of soul retrieval.
Well, that's what it is. It's become soul retrieval, but in the sort of new age version of soul retrieval, you know, there could be many millions of soul parts, and God knows where they are, and there's great battles that you have to do. And it is a very similar process, but I am really just looking at of the actual essence that should be living in the five yin organs. If one or more parts is not there, we want to bring that back, then that person's five elements are going to be much stronger from then on. And so I have to do less. You know, I don't treat people very often, maybe every 3 or 4 months, some people 6 months, some people less than that, I mean more than that. What I then eventually want to do on each person is a way of assessing and creating a key. The assessment comes from the person's consciousness, and my consciousness, it's just consciousness, will determine the element that is dominant in Jing, Qi, and Shen. So if you put those together, the body, in describing that, the body tells you where to insert it. Because element within element within element, that's a very, very old way, a Taoist way of treating people, means that there is a meridian and there's a point in the meridian, and then there is a principle within that, that it's like a little harmony. It's a resonance, which is a picture when the practitioner inserts it in, because it's a picture of nature, but there's you know, element, and then within that there's another element, within that there's another element, so it's an image, but it's actually a sound, And when you put it in that part of the energy body, the whole body tunes up like a song, like a resonance, and actually it will open a whole lot of stuff in the meridian system if you can really get to what that point is and what that key is.
That sounds very interesting. I see some correlations with some of the Qigong practices I'm familiar with. Some of the ways that you're describing it doesn't sound quite familiar, so I hope that our listeners are not getting too mystified. What if I ask you this? What's your greatest dream regarding Qigong practice, your own Qigong practice and Qigong in general?
Well, I would say it really has to do with this imprint that I've been working with forever, which is centering. The ability to deeply find still the mind and find that place of center and receive from that inner essence. So it's about relationship. It's about me as a person holding and developing deeper and deeper relationship to my own spiritual essence and to the spiritual essence all around me. And the more I can teach that and just help people experience that and help support them along any kind of journey of doing centering, that is a huge contribution, because every person that learns centering, it goes with them into their life, and it changes them as a person, and it spreads. So it's about just helping people find their core and get out of their surface mind, the storyline that is always whirling around in their head, and get down into really their inner well, you might say. It really helps clear the outer vision of their life. So it helps get them into the internal questions. So, I mean, really this process is my greatest vision. And, it's what my journey has been all about. And whatever it is I do or teach, I am working with that process, like how to help develop that relationship, how to hold that inner attention, how to develop from just a dot of consciousness into an actual space that you can relax in and receive help.
Mm-hmm. Since you've been working on this vision for all these years, let me ask you this. How would you know that you've accomplished your dream, that you've manifested it?
Well, you know it every day. I mean, it's not, my dream is not some glorious thing of fame and fortune. It is really to walk with the sense of peace and happiness and calm and harmony within, and that the inner essence is a part of all that I think and do. It's not like it doesn't have to just be, a sitting practice or something, that gap between your personal mind and your impersonal mind is narrowed so that it manifests through everything. And that kind of, the inner essence is, it helps you not effort so much. Personally, we're always working and efforting, and it always has to be, the goal. And women are less goal-orientated. We're a little more about process. But,
right.
I still have goals, too, because that's important for everyone. But it's really about if we can take that state, then that goes with us. And if we can teach that to teenagers, in other words, at wherever they are, and I teach energy practices that require the centering process. So while they're working on their hara, say, what I call the solar plexus bowl. It is just a practice. It's a simple way of working on the hara and that whole center in your solar plexus that relates to your belt channel, your daimo, and relates to what in acupuncture is called alarm points. So it's just a way of pushing restart so that you shift from stress response into relaxation response, because
it's a reset button.
Huh? Yeah.
It's a reset button.
It's a reset button. And it actually does shift you into relaxation response. So that shifts that affects all disease process. We know that 85% or to 90% is stress related.
Well, and probably then it would make sense to address the root cause of stress, which is a reactivity of the mind, because stress is not just how we deal with it's not the stressors that are bombarding us, it's how we deal with the stressors, whether or not we get reactive in relation to these stressors.
Right, but that's in your energy body.
Fight or flight. Well, exactly. But
right,
it also probably depends on your beliefs and values.
Yes, but some...
Would you say that there's... Yeah?
When you work straight with the energy body, you're working with your experience. You know, you can, in 15 minutes, you can learn the solar plexus bowl, which actually you will feel vastly different than you did before you did it. And it is teaching you not only centering, which is about your mind, it's getting out of the responses of your personal mind into the deeper state. So it's shifting your neurological system. But it's also helping teach you that about developing what we call in Qigong the egg, you know, the space at the edge of your field, because a lot of people are totally unaware of that.
That's probably what people would also relate to as an aura, right? Or not quite.
Well, it's at the edge of the aura.
The
shell of the egg, which every indigenous culture learned this in their shamanic and inner process. But we need it more than they ever did. And it is a filter. It is part of the shen. It's the edge of the personal shen before it goes into the spiritual field. And it contains the personal field. And it's not like a hard shell or anything. It's a permeable shell, but it's an intelligence. It's part of the...
Sometimes we develop the shell so hard, so thick, that we feel separated from the rest of the universe. And that's probably when that energy shell becomes kind of hardened, turns into a cell, into a prison cell of sorts.
Well, it does, but that's because things are closed inside that shell, and the energy is way sucked in. And that shell that's really hardened is much closer into your body, which is why the world is drawing too close into your energy field. You know, you don't have the filters that you need because things are closed inside. You know, even your daimo, when it's closed, you're not occupying your space. A big part of, you know, the teaching is take your space. It means your energetic space. It means a space actually inside your body holding your vibratory particles together, but it also means the space in the field.
So it sounds like learning this system that you're talking about would require a certain new set of worldviews or beliefs or perspectives. Would you say that is somehow related to your studies of anthroposophic?
I wouldn't say that it would require a new set. It's not. You know, most of my views come from Taoism, and anthroposophy is very related to Taoism. And I wouldn't say that it's a new set of beliefs at all, because I teach people from all different religious or spiritual orientations. And, you know, every culture has their way of understanding this. They have their words. And I just find words that are common to everyone, you know. The energy practices are part of the mystical tradition of every single religion that's out there. And some of them have very, you know, they have practices of their own, and Qigong usually can enhance those practices. Some don't.
Right.
So,
well, it seems like most spiritual traditions have the esoteric and exoteric branches. And, of course, most of the exoteric branches are well-known and widespread, versus esoteric ones are more for the initiated, and those are the ones that seem to be more directed towards the internal practices. Please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. You seem to be familiar or studied the esoteric Christianity. Would you tell us a little bit about how that works together with your practice of Qigong?
Well, you know, the esoteric, some people think that's the secret traditions or something. And there's nothing secret about most esoteric traditions. They're just a depth study.
Right.
Esoteric Christianity looks at the energetics of the principles of divine love, or the Christ consciousness that is within every person. And you know, Rudolf Steiner, 50 years ago, he had an incredible, he was a scientist in all kinds of ways, developed biodynamic gardening, developed the Waldorf schools that are all over the world for education, and many, many other things. But that is a living tradition that has been carried on by many other teachers. And so esoteric Christianity is just a deeper imprint. But, you know, today there are many Christian and other religions that are sort of returning to some root, more ecumenical, truly Catholic, meaning universal, like a universal imprint that we're all working with, whatever ways that culture had of experiencing it or expressing it, it is universal. And so a lot of them, I find it's encouraging that they are returning to sort of more sort of small community experiences, where it's the church is not a building, and the church is not dogma, and the church is not, you know, a hierarchy of some sort of political whatever. It is the people. It is the hearts and souls of the people, and their relationship to each other, and their ability to support each other, and to see through all of our humanness the divine light and love that is within each person. It's very universal. I don't think, certainly in my groups, and even in the Holy Wisdom retreats, we have absolutely people from every tradition. Because every
would you mind sharing a little bit about your retreats too? I hear that you're planning on holding another retreat soon.
Right, we do them. Claudia McLaren is a friend of mine who we used to teach together. We taught together about 12 years, and then we didn't teach together for 12 years, just each developing our own work, and now we're teaching together again. It's just been an interesting cycle. And we have different parts, but we have just a wonderful, smooth flow between us as far as teaching, you know, just works, no competition.
Right.
And we bring in different things. I bring a little more of the practical, the Qigong, the energy practices, how to, you know, it's just the experiential. But, you know, the Holy Wisdom retreats are about connecting with the world soul, and every tradition has a way of naming the divine feminine or the world soul. And, you know, in Christianity, it was called Sophia, or Divine Sophia, Daughter of God, or equated often in many traditions, Christianity, with Mother Mary. But in Judaism, the Hebrew scriptures of the Proverbs called her Wisdom Sophia. And even in Sufism, Kalok, which I can't really pronounce, but that's the aspect of creation known as the Eternal Wisdom, or Sophia. In Hinduism, they called her Shakti, or Kali, or Devi. The Kabbalah, the word was Shekinah. And in Buddhism, she's called Kuan Yin. Tibetan Buddhism, they call her Tara. In Taoism, it's Wu Qi, the one. And Taoism really goes into, exploring her attributes. So I pull a lot from that. But the Egyptians called her Isis. So there's many manifestations of the Divine Feminine. The Greeks just called her Wisdom. Even Native American tradition, White Buffalo Calf Woman, is the manifestation of the Divine Feminine. You know, in Taoism, they throughout the Taoist texts, they actually look at the Wan or Wu Qi in lots of different ways, and there's people who are much better Taoist scholars than I am, but I go to where I'm drawn to and what I resonate with. But one thing is they describe it, Holy Wisdom, as a state, the state of called consciousness. And they also look at it as a principle. It's the principle of the great void, which of course the Hindu tradition works with a lot too. So, and many esoteric Christianity, you know, a lot of people just think of it as this being, which is the formless substance of the universe. And
I didn't know that there is such a perspective among the Christians, that there was a being that is the substance of the universe that is not anthropomorphized.
That is not what?
Anthropomorphized, is perceived as some kind of a person, a personality of sorts.
Well, that's in traditional Christianity, but in the deeper esoteric Christianity, it's she's more of a being of a substance without form, just like she is in Taoism, the great void from which everything is born and everything returns to. The yin-yang Godhead, of the divine union, is a unity of being and non-being, and this is the being part. But Taoism also looks at it as primordial energy, the life force of the universe, and they look at it as the characteristic of oneness, the oneness.
So in other words, so then we can say that perhaps the chi may be viewed as substance that everything is made of, rather than just some mysterious force that flows down certain meridians in the body. Does that make any sense?
You know, the word chi is used in many different ways, like the word etheric is used in many different ways, and those are different kinds of languages.
By chi?
But there, you know, there is bodily chi. There is chi in our body, which is the chi in the meridians. When we're talking about the formless substance of the being of the divine feminine or the world soul, it is within each person, definitely. But it's also without. And so we can really... there's all kinds of concepts for this, but it's do we want, if we're going to develop a relationship with this aspect, and which is real, which is not just like, you know, some people floating around in the sky somewhere or whatever, you know, the old way of thinking about it was, we do need to be able to experience these things within ourselves and just go with our own experience.
So if you imagine that people who study with you and their students and their clients touch upon this divine principle and perhaps develop more of the ability to stay in tune with it throughout the day, throughout their daily lives. Would you say that that would create any kind of effect on the general society, on the population of the United States or the whole world?
Would people who have studied with me or been my clients and experienced this, would that have an effect on the whole world?
Yes.
Sure. Just like there's many ways of doing this. I do it my way. I mean, there's all kinds of ways of doing it. But really, I mean, people talk about, you know, the sort of crisis we're in right now, or the, you know, the economic downturn and everything. You know, things are changing, and we're in a great event. And so every way that people have of approaching this and developing more relationship to their inner essence and their consciousness, so that and more ability to just hold empty space, so that the I am can wake up. Whether we call it presence, which is overused word now, we don't even know what it means anymore, but it's like that inner essence, the world spirit, which is inside of us, that flame, that spark, that holding space so that it can be birthed in a sense. There is great help for us here right now. Things are changing. And, you know, the economics of the world is drastically changing fast. And we really need to look at it as a wonderful event that also has a distraction, because anything that is happening that's moving forward, there's going to be the backlash too. And there's going to be the chance to call it something really, really negative. But personally, I don't see it that way. So, of course, yeah, we know there's plenty of statistics out there for just a certain number of people doing meditation in a city will change the crime rate of that city. That is completely proven. So, of course, it will change the world. And there are ways in which of treatment and process of that actually work very fast, very directly, and actually do change people's lives. You know, that just the process of being able to teach, particularly women, they can get this because they don't mind going into something that is unknown. And just see what is it that you experience. But just teaching them to be able to dispel energy from a person that is not theirs. That used to be something that I could only teach to, you know, people as they were deep in the process of learning how to do healing, because a lot of factors that I don't have time to go into, but It the way I was doing it and so on, and it worked really well, but I, you know, there were certain things that I wouldn't teach till later and later in the program. And now, you know, like, because we need it now, you know, I teach the general public, you know. When I do a one-day workshop for the general public, I have learned that anyone can learn to do this. So that's important to get out there. There's a lot of things that are simple and direct and are important tools, or just tools, to have in any family system. And if we can suspend our disbelief and just even suspend concepts and really able to center, anyone can do that. And if a person actually does have energy in their system that's not theirs, which is completely possible, and children are, it's an epidemic in children and adolescents and whole world, really. But if a person understands that that could be possible, they don't even have to name it or anything. You know, I'm in my system, I'm going to name it more. I'm going to see how long it's been there and so on. And that's not important. They can just clear it. And it actually doesn't take beliefs. It actually takes faith. And faith is different. It's a resonance. It's a magnetic resonance. And it just means faith that we as human beings and any other kind of beings on the planet, but as human beings, we are more than the material body. However you want to describe it, I call it soul and spirit. We do have an energy body, and we are more than the material body. And so if we have that faith, that will magnetize the experience to us. It's been proven.
Well, since you founded the National Qigong Association, or you were one of the original founders in the mid-90s, or late 90s, how has this worked out for you? Are you satisfied? Are you happy with the way that the organization has been going? How do you feel about it?
You know, it's maybe not in its infancy. It's probably in its adolescent years. I don't know. I think it's a wonderful concept. It's a way for people who are chi enthusiasts to get together. And the thing is, people who just work directly with chi, you know, they are previously been very individualized people. You know, because it's not out there in our culture, is it? So, you know, not as much. So previously, say 20 years ago, those were unusual people. Like bringing this through in the 80s was really tough compared to now. You know, there's much more acceptance. So it's wonderful to have an organization that brings people together. It's of the conferences I go to and teach at, it's the most fun conference. It's just fun. You know, I don't ever find things really boring. And, you know, like I could go to almost any of the workshops and find something of interest. So.
And you're going to be teaching a workshop yourself, too, are you not?
I'm going to teach a one-day workshop, pre-conference workshop, before the National Qigong Association conference this year, which will be in Monterey, California. Beautiful place by the water.
That's the Lamar Retreat Center, right?
Yeah, and the conference is the 27th and 28th of June, so not that long. And the pre-conference is the 26th, so it's Friday. It's an all-day on Friday. So I'll be teaching some of the same things I taught on the East Coast last year, which had a great response. And it's just how to teach the general public and healers things that we can do as a personal practice, and then we can do the same thing as a treatment, as a clinical treatment. So I want people to see, here's how we do it internally, and that develops the perception. And then here's how we work with another person. So you don't have to, this doesn't have to be a professional track in order to learn the basic skills of doing this. I've been teaching, you know, parents and of very small children. I've been teaching teenagers in high school settings, kind of saying how to do these things, and they're great. I have people that contact me that I taught when they were in high school, and, you know, they're way out in their 30s now, but
they still use it.
Yeah, I mean, I taught them when they were in junior high. Huh?
Did any of them actually go ahead and start practice energy arts professionally?
Well, a lot of them practice energy arts in personal practice. You know, that's where you start, in personal practice. And
right.
Some of them have gone into the healing arts, yeah. But
excellent.
But as far as the National Qigong Association, in terms of people teaching Qigong, the personal practice, which is the majority of people, that's what they do, and that's what's spreading Qigong. And Qigong is like I said, it's very simple. It's very easy to learn. You can teach all kinds of populations Qigong, from the junior high or the high school or the seniors or any other population. Kaiser has
right.
it everywhere. The clinical practice
Kaiser
is a
Qigong?
Growing field. Huh?
Kaiser teaches Qigong?
Oh, yes. It certainly does in Colorado.
Oh,
yeah, they
I
found
have no
it
idea.
To be very effective. And they do in California, too, I know.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, they have
stuff.
Found that if people do Qigong, they have less medical things they have to be dealing with. So it makes financial sense to do that. So I think, you know, when people gather together, they have much more power than before. We were all just individuals. And a lot of the people who founded the National Qigong Association, there was about 7 or 8 of us, I don't really remember how many, but everybody had their part, and everybody did their part, but we were all independent practitioners, and it's much more powerful to come together in a group that's specifically about Qigong, which is really at the core of those Asian energy arts, the simple, the practices, and the clinical application, which was originally the way it was done. And then later, you know, they used bones and they used bee stings and they used sticks and stuff and eventually needles and heat and then qi manipulation of, you know, that became way, way later, shiatsu and tuina. Tuina is an incredible thing that looks like massage, but it's really energy. So all of those are, you know, come from that original way of just working directly with the qi. And clinical practice in Qigong is, you know, it's kind of been under the radar for a long time, and it is, a lot of people are interested in it now and don't know where that would go, but the National Qigong Association is the organization that supports all those styles and forms of Qigong. And it would really be a shame, don't you think, if in this country it just boiled down to we needed to do it just this way or that way, because that's never been the tradition. And
right.
What I've seen, like in the clinical practice, the amazing thing, studying all over the world, and you know, some I was in Asia for 2 years in the 70s, saw this kind of work all over the place. But even in my trainings in China, I see that, you know, people do it all differently. They assess differently, even from the same hospital. Like Shiyuan Hospital has the most intense, at least it did, doesn't now, but training program. And even there, you know, lots of doctors, they have their unique way of assessing that they can then teach, maybe. And maybe if that's your orientation, you'll go in that direction. But they certainly have the unique ways of doing it. Whereas
I noticed you mentioned on several occasions that Qigong is not being taught or is not being practiced in China as much as it used to be in the 1990s. What is that related to? What kind of precipitated this change?
Well, the whole movement of Falun Gong really scared the government.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say in 99, I led the first in National Qigong Association, the first trip to study medical Qigong. And
right.
that we had our choice of hospitals to go to: Western medicine hospitals, which had their Qigong departments, which worked in all definitely qi, all off the body, powerful practices, and some physical. And then the TCM hospitals also, and Shiyuan was probably the biggest one. I mean, they had probably 12 different doctors there, and I got to know their head doctor and the director of the clinic really well. In fact, the next year, I believe it was, I brought the head doctor over here for a training. But say, so in 1999, there was all kinds of Qigong, really, really good stuff, you know, like I mentioned, you know, working with stuff that was sort of the end game. Western medicine couldn't treat it, TCM couldn't treat it, and Qigong was having a great effect. Both the practice, the person, it wasn't just treating people, it was maybe teaching specific practices, but having the person do their Qigong practice, if it was a serious illness, you know, at least twice a day, and then doing the Qi practice, just amazing things we saw. And in 1 year, we came back in 2000, did another training, that time all with Shi Yuan, and there was almost no Qigong happening. They said, oh, you know, the off the body doesn't mean anything. You could just pass a shoe over and it would be the same thing. And I looked at them like, what are you talking about? You know, who are you talking to here? You know, like the rest of the world is moving forward. You just moved backwards about 20 years. This is your own tradition. But it was very, very, very political. And it took 5 years for Qigong to come back to a point where you can practice it in public, and you know, if you, as long as a group is small. But the government got really afraid of, because of the Falun Gong, and Falun Gong was really big, and government, you know, self-empowerment and all of that. And
very
Falun
tough.
Gong kind of really wanted to do it in a way that was publicly demonstrated, rather than, you know, kind of Qigong had been a little more, you don't have to run around waving flags and stuff. You just go to the park and do it, or do it in your group, or do it in your courtyard. So the government got scared, and they clamped down on everything, and they, you know, between 99, there were 12 magnificent doctors, say, in the Shiyuan clinic, hospital clinic. They had a whole department themselves. Exactly a year later, they were all gone. I mean, they were doing Tuina, which is fine. Tuina is great. It's a physical form, but it is not the Qigong that they were doing at all. And
right.
Most
and they
of
were
those,
not teaching Qigong to the patients anymore?
No. In fact, in ours, do the training, we had to close the blinds and the drapes everywhere, and too long of a story. We even got arrested, you know, for related to Qigong.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go to China and get arrested. I hear they don't like llamas.
Yeah. Well, they don't like anyone who's associated with Qigong either. They didn't then, but so, you know, most of those doctors went to Japan, where the people are, you know, they're superstars in the sense that the people, the Qigong hadn't been developed that well there, and they got invitations to get out. And if they didn't get out, they're really under scrutiny. It's very tight.
I hear that people also left for Taiwan because Taiwan doesn't seem to have any problem with Qigong practice.
Right. And some of them went to Hong Kong, but then when Hong Kong turned over to China, it got a little more, it's still a little more open. But nothing is open like it is in the West. You know, we have the ability to do whatever practice we want, to pursue whatever spiritual calling we have, and to...
As long as we don't say that we practice medicine without license.
Yeah, well, that's a different thing. That's why we don't diagnose, we assess. And in fact, we shouldn't be diagnosing a physical disease. A lot of Qigong doctors do. But we should be assessing the energy body. That's our expertise. Qigong is about developing the qi, perceiving the qi, and if we keep remembering what, like in clinical practice, what it's really about, it's about the qi. That's why if you just have information and forms in a more of a, you know, like acupuncture schools or something like that, of course, hopefully there's a lot of schools where they teach them Qigong because, you know, it's about developing your own qi so you can affect someone else's qi even more. But we have the ability to do all these things, and America is where Qigong has, that's where it's going to flower, and that's why it's important to make sure that all forms and styles can be represented, which is what the NQA does, and it's
right.
The place where that is true. And of course, you know, as things go along, there's always need for adjustment and change and shifting. But you know, if someone is really a Qi enthusiast, or if they want to learn more about it, it's a great place to go. And we need, in the National Qigong Association, we need the people that are out there that do this work to come in and see if that fits for them, see if they could be part of that work, because it's only going to support their life work, because it does. It does.
So it would benefit the practitioners as well to become members of the NQA.
Well, that's the main thing. Of course it benefits them, you know, because the more people with more styles and that come together, but what unites people is the development of the life force body, the Qi body, in all of its ways. And, you know, that's Qi in the big sense, you know, that Jing Qi Shen, you know, it's all of the energy body of the human being. And but, you know, it has such a long tradition, like that's why it's so different from Western energy work or Western practices, because it is based on a long tradition. And even though it may manifest different here and at this time, because American people have different things happening with them than ancient Chinese had. First of all, they weren't even living in the electromagnetic soup that we're living in. So we have different different obstructions, you could say, in our energy.
Different challenges to deal with.
Yeah, different challenges and, you know, different external factors and therefore different internal factors. And so it's going to be different here, of course. That's the way that the Tao is understood to be. It will manifest differently in every place at every time. And if we can embrace that, and we have the freedom to do so. I mean, I really learned that from a lot of the places that I have been where they did not or do not have the freedom that we do. So if we don't exercise that freedom and also group together for strength and power, you know, of course we could lose it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you use it or lose it.
Yeah.
All right, well, let me ask you about your own secrets of success and your mastery. If you don't mind sharing, what makes you successful? What is your secret? Since the name of our radio talk show is The Secrets of Qigong Masters, maybe you can share a little bit with us about that.
Well, really, Tantrapa, I have been speaking a lot of my secrets, of course, but my greatest secret is that I it's not anything I hold on to or cling to. I have developed so many different forms than, say, people would recognize from, say, acupuncture. And that's simply because I allow it to move through, and I don't even hold it. You know, I will teach it. So the secret really is centering. The secret is being able to still the mind and go into a place where imprints from your wiser, bigger view can be received, and to keep developing that relationship. So even like assessing through the heart center, if people knew how affected it is to be able to tap into the hologram, not necessarily as it expresses in your wrists, but just straight into the heart, because the heart pumps into the wrist, but you can just tap right into the heart.
And by the heart, you mean the internal organ or the energy center?
I mean it all. It's all there. It's all there. It's physically, it's an organ and a sac around the organ. but that's connected to everything else. But energetically, you know, it's a chakra, it's a cauldron, it's the essence. It's the middle of the figure eight, of the three-dimensional figure eight that our whole energy body functions with. So that's a tremendous secret. If people know how to do assessment and if they know how to ask a question, they're only limited by their question. And that is really amazing, I have found it. And a lot of these things I have found through facing things in myself and my life that are either difficult or life-threatening. I mean, and you know, you either can get stuck in the, oh, my God, I could die here, or like, wow, this is a journey. If I can sever myself from the collective field of whatever that is and be free, then that's going to open, or it does, open doorways in your mind. And so things can move through you. So it's not any one secret. It's just a process. It's, again, it's a secret that is within everyone, that, you know, life doesn't have to be so hard. And there is help. And the help, of course, is all around us. And it comes through all other people. But, you know, the voice of help is inside. And if we can just, you know, take enough time to develop that internal dialogue, that internal question, the relationship, have sufficient time in our life for retreat and quiet and inwardness to nurture that, everyone can tap into their own secrets. They're really the universe, or we could say the formless substance moving through us. She wants to co-create our life with us. She wants to express our perfect health and our perfect wealth. You know, she wants, in the sense of the world's soul, she wants to develop within us the ability to hold space so the world spirit, that spark of the divine light within us, can manifest, and it will. So it's the secret is out. It's not a secret, and it's not the secret, the movie, either.
All right. Well, I'm really glad that I managed to get you to come to our show, and it's been an honor to hear the wonderful presentation that you presented to us today. I just wanted to thank you for sharing with us your wisdom and your knowledge, and also telling us more about the National Qigong Association. And one more thing before we disembark, so to speak. How can our listeners find out more about your teachings? Do you have a website?
Yeah, they can just go to my website. My website is thecenterplace.com. So it's easy. thecenterplace.com. And really all my contact information is there. And my programs are there, and so on. And I hope, you know, you turn me loose, and I do go into what some people might consider the mystical or esoteric. It's just that there are many levels of depth that we can think, but really it's not unreachable for anyone. This is accessible to everyone. It's not like it's a depth someone might think they couldn't go to. Of course they can. Of course they can. They're a human being. There's so much more than they might realize. They're so creative, and it's just a way of tapping into that. Just, you know, my take on it.
Our abilities are mostly limited by our own self-limiting beliefs and inhibitions.
Sure.
And lack of creativity.
Sure. Or getting stuck in the competitive model, which our culture really tries to spoon-feed us. It takes the creativity of our relationship to heaven, our qian in the I Ching. But that heaven principle of creativity and strength, and it twists it into competitiveness. She doesn't have to. It's a distortion.
Well, I certainly...
It was great talking to you.
Hope that there is no competitiveness in Boulder, Colorado. Because I'm actually contemplating moving to Boulder in perhaps a few months. So I will be delighted to be your neighbor.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's competitiveness everywhere, and there's a lot of Qigong and energy practices, and Boulder is a hotbed for everything. Everyone thinks it's, you know, there's it's so great for Qi practices or someone. There's just so much going on in Boulder in this that people have a vast array to choose from, which is good.
Great. Yeah. Well, I look forward to
it.
And once again, thank you very much for sharing with us all the wonderful knowledge and wisdom. And I wish you good night.
And you too. And good night to anyone who has either now or later is listening to this dialogue that we're having. And if you have any questions, you can always email me, which is damarisjm@comcast.net, or just go to my website, thecenterplace.com, and you can get my email there. So thanks very much.
All right.
We will
take care, everyone.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.